Day three of our excellent adventure in D.C., and every day is a gift with President Trump in the White House. The president held a cabinet meeting today. He salutes Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce for getting engaged, says he's going to soon have a majority on the Federal Reserve. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve board member that is getting fired says, no, you won't. Marco Rubio says Marco Rubio's lighting the world on fire, says President Trump. RFK says in a month they're going to have some big news on autism and how this relates to vaccines. All the while, people throughout D.C. get used to more cops and military on the streets. Other than that, nothing much happening here in the nation's capital. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you on the Steve Hallstrom Show for this Tuesday, August 26, 2025. I don't know about you, but if you have an opportunity or have an opportunity or have recently traveled for work on a Sunday, which I haven't done for a long time, and then you have a couple of really busy days to start out your week wherever you're going, you're thinking it should be Friday right about now. And honest to gosh, that's how it feels. I got here about lunchtime on Sunday and had a long run that I had to do for marathon training, got a little bit of work done that evening. It was a busy and full day. And then yesterday and today, two really crazy days of getting things done here in D.C. as we are doing our live coverage from the nation's capital. And I'm telling you what, it feels like it should be a Friday or at least a Thursday, but no, it's only Tuesday, and the week has still got a lot of tread left on the tire. So a lot of ground to cover here on the Steve Hallstrom Show today. Want to say thank you to some great sponsors who have made our trip possible, that we can come to places like this and ask a lot of the questions that you are asking. And we say thank you to Freedom Matters USA, our presenting sponsor, Busick Olson and Associates, our premier sponsor, and then our supporting sponsors, Jet Black Industries, Ellingson Drainage Solutions, Sun Control, Moxie Java, Halstenson Askew Wealth Advisors, ND Estate Services, Remax Tom Colosio, and Dave's West Fargo Tire and Service. A big thank you to all of them for our coverage here today. We've had a ton of stuff here over the first couple of days that we've been here, and we kind of finished up our last round of interviews today when we interviewed Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, and we're working on loading that back at home, and so we're going to have that for you tomorrow on Scott Hennin's What's on Your Mind program. I'd hope that I could have a little bit of that for you here today, but sending big video files is one of those crazy tech things that just requires a little bit of time. Not able to get that done, but I've got a lot of really interesting stuff for you on the program today. We're going to bring you plenty from D.C. from that cabinet meeting that took place earlier today. We're also going to hear from Ron Vitiello, and Ron is a big force in the border patrol efforts going on across our country. And I mentioned this to you yesterday, that I don't know that there is a bigger storyline going on in our country right now than what's happening at the border. It should get a lot more coverage than it does, but it went from absolutely bananas to just dead calm really within a few weeks. And because of that, I think it's sort of in the rearview mirror, but it really shouldn't be. And Ron Vitiello is Customs and Border Patrol Senior Advisor, and we'll hear from him later today about border apprehensions and border patrol enforcement. And we're also asking a lot of questions about the northern border now. As you know, there have been a number of ICE detainees that have been arrested and detained by ICE and Border Patrol here in our area. In our area, it's in particular, it's Immigration Customs Enforcement more than Border Patrol, but they all work together. So we'll have that on the way here today as well. We're going to learn a little something today about the dark money in D.C. politics as well. Scott Walter is an author of a new book out about how the dark money gets into politics. And according to his numbers, $2.4 billion was injected into the campaign through non-governmental agencies and anonymous sources, nonprofit organizations, NGOs, that just stuck money in, and nobody really knows where it came from, But Mr. Walter's been digging on that. And while we're in D.C., we thought this is a really good subject for us to touch on, so we'll do that here today. And then before we finish up, a little bit of football news. The Bison football official depth chart was released today, so we've got that to talk about too. Oh, and then I should mention that in the 4 o'clock hour, Dr. Frayne Olson will be with us from NDSU. Our soybean farmers in North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota are looking around going, what in the world is going on here? We are seeing some soybean prices under $10 a bushel right now, and that's like nothing. And so there's a lot of concern going on in our farm community about what's going to happen this year with the soybean crop. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Olson here today, too, on the show. Our phone number is 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co. All right, let's get to it here with the 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on a busy and eventful day here in our part of the world. In D.C. today, a very cool 82 degrees, low humidity. It's been a very nice day here in the nation's capital, the kind of day that makes you feel like you're maybe back in North Dakota or Minnesota. No, we are in the nation's capital. Usually it's upper 80s, low 90s, and a lot of humidity on days like today. But we are enjoying a very Midwestern type of day here today. Average high for Fargo this time of year, Moorhead, West Fargo, 79. Average low 55. Record high 98 in 1953. And record low was 36 in 1915. Sunrise this morning was at 6:39, and the sun will set at 8:17. CNBC tells us today that it was an active day on Wall Street. A lot of trading going on today, and for most of the day, we didn't really have a whole lot of movement going on, but we did have a few things that happened as the day went on, and we had a little bit of a move in oil prices today, too. When you're talking about gold and silver prices, not much action going on there, and as you can tell, my computer has frozen up a little bit, so I'm trying to refresh my page to give you the market update for today. While I do that, let me go to a AAA and get our fuel prices here. The national average today for regular unleaded gas across the country is $3.17 a gallon. And in Minnesota, it's $2.98. South Dakota, $2.99. And North Dakota is at $2.92 a gallon on oil prices today. All right, taking a look at the S&P 500, it closed higher today. Some gains in the semiconductor company NVIDIA, which has kind of been a darling of Wall Street. And the president is making some preemptive strikes on the Federal Reserve Board to try to move interest rates down. We'll talk more about that as the show goes on today. And the S&P 500 was up slightly today because of that. Dow Jones Industrial Average and the NASDAQ were both also in positive territory today. S&P 500 up 26, NASDAQ up 94, the Dow was up 135. So a little bit of activity going on there. WTI crude oil, though, an interesting story happening there today, fell more than 2%. There is a storyline coming out of Russia that they are going to be increasing their supply of crude oil coming up in the fall and winter months, and that sent oil prices down a little bit today. Gold today hit a two-week peak. I guess the uncertainty about President Trump firing a Fed governor made some people feel like now is the time to get out of stocks and into gold, which doesn't sound like the rationale that I would use, but that's what happened today. Gold up $25 an ounce at $3,443. Silver was basically unchanged today, not really much movement there. Bitcoin today down, up about $1,000 from where we were yesterday at $110,922. So that's a look at markets today. Now let's take a look at some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, we don't know exactly who all is going to be in the pool for Fargo mayor. Mayor Tim Mahoney is terming out in 2026, and we will have a new mayor. Cass County Commissioner Joel Vettel says he's considering a run for the top spot in the city of Fargo. When contacted by our newsroom, he said he has not made a decision as of yet. He was with the Fargo Police Department for a number of years and then was executive director of the Fargo Park District before taking a job with Sanford Health. In addition to the mayor spot on the city commission, there are two other spots up for grabs. So he's not saying no, not saying yes. Most of the time when you have people saying things like that, they end up jumping in. So we'll see what Joel Vettel decides to do. City leaders in Moorhead have given the go-ahead for aerial spraying for mosquitoes. The council voted 7-0 last night to reinstate the policy. Council member Deb White was absent. Mayor Shelley Carlson and other council members said they've gotten a lot of feedback on the issue of aerial spraying, and Carlson said it's garnered the most conversation since she began on the city council. Council member Lisa Borgen said, most of our residents want us to aerial spray, and we have to listen to those that we represent. So it looks like maybe community panic is not the right word, but additional input from people in the city has gotten the attention of the city council members in Moorhead. Meanwhile, mosquitoes carrying the West Nile virus continue to make a bump here in North Dakota. According to Health and Human Services, 42 people now in North Dakota have been infected with West Nile. A majority of the cases are reported in the age groups of 40 to 49 and 60 plus. Cass County leads the state, oh goody, with 13 cases of West Nile virus. We're number one. Hooray. There was an interesting meeting last night in Harwood, a little bit north of the Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo area there, as the city and some industry leaders defended the AI data center being planned just outside of Harwood. It's going to be a 280-megawatt facility, a $3 billion artificial intelligence data center, and there were some tense moments there. If I read, the forum had a good write-up on this today, and it sounds like most people were just feeling like the city was trying to sneak something past them, had not been real forthright about what was going, thought it was sprung on them at the last minute. But the city leaders that were there last night talking about what's happening here, Blake Hankey and others, said this is something that is going to go to the Planning Commission for approval next week. Then the council will vote on it in September. He said, I do think this is a good thing that is coming to our area, no matter how you might feel about it moving in. WDAY radio reports something that we got yesterday from the Border Patrol chief. Border Patrol Chief Michael Banks told our Scott Hennin yesterday that the chief, he and his position and his agency, is paying particular attention to the northern border of the United States to make sure that the northern border is being protected as well. He said the northern border, quote, is a big concern of all of us, and we're going to spread our resources out appropriately based on the threat. He said that the issues facing their agents is a little bit of everything. Illegal drugs like fentanyl coming in from Canada. And he said, we know that we've got to pay attention to it because there's not as much attention there, some vast expansive areas there. President Trump says that he will soon have a majority on the Federal Reserve. This after last night making a move to fire Central Bank Governor Lisa Cook. He claims he can do it with executive action. She claims that it cannot be done and says she's not going anywhere. But Trump says that if he is able to make that change, he will have enough people that are on his side to lower interest rates, which we've talked a lot about this on this program, that interest rates, I believe, are sort of the thing that are what's needed to get people to feel confident about the future and business people to feel confident about taking some chances and rolling the dice a little bit with their expansion and growth plans. All right, and finally, a couple of notes from the sports world slash entertainment world. Former Bison quarterback Easton Stick got cut today. He was released by the Atlanta Falcons. He's been in the league for several years, but has just never really got that opportunity. He may get a chance to join another team if he gets signed to a practice squad or gets picked up by another team. He's been pretty good this year in preseason action, but it just has never really been able to get that big shot. So he is now on the waiver wire. A Fargo product has committed to play hockey at the University of North Dakota. His name is Zaid Penner, and he has played the last couple of seasons at North Star Christian Academy in Alexandria. He played one game for the Fargo Force in the USHL at the end of last year and was most recently on a team that helped the United States win its first gold medal at the Hlinka-Gretzky Cup in 22 years. He is verbally committed to Grand Forks to play for UND. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce have announced their engagement. And after a lot of speculation, they've been dating for a couple of years or so, and they released some photos today and say that they are going to get married. It is an old mine brilliant cut diamond that has been designed by Kelce and a fine jeweler in New York City. And so they've been somewhat of a controversial couple. I think most of us on the conservative side would say that they lean a little bit to the left. But this is certainly a notable couple that has decided to tie the knot. And so, as with all marriages, we wish them well, and we hope it's a long and happy time of wedded bliss for those two. All right, when we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, one of the biggest laughs today that came out of President Trump's cabinet meeting came from Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. He does a few other things as well, and made a little bit of a joke about that today. We'll talk about that when we come back live to Washington, D.C. on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Hey, if you need a new garage door or fast, reliable repairs, OnTrack Garage Door has got you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs as well. OnTrack Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values, quality work, honest service, and a team that you can trust. Let them get you on the right track. With OnTrack, call 701-793-4246 today. That's 701-793-4246 today. All right, so the joke going around the president's cabinet right now is that Marco Rubio is one of the busiest men in President Trump's cabinet. And in addition to being the Secretary of State, which you probably know, that's the job he was originally recruited to do, but he's also piled up a few other duties. And President Trump has done some of this. And you remember Doug Burgum talking about this during the campaign, that President Trump is thinking that you could maybe do a couple of different things. You maybe don't have to have 800 people doing 800 jobs. You can consolidate that, and somebody could do a couple of different things. Marco Rubio is one of those people that is now running USAID, and he's the acting national security advisor as well, because Mike Waltz is taking another position. And so Rubio is kind of juggling a whole bunch of balls now for President Trump. And so today, as the president got his cabinet meeting started, there was, this is probably the third or fourth cabinet meeting. They haven't had many of them. And when they do, it's kind of a big deal. The president goes around and kind of lets each of the people talk a little bit about what they're doing before they get to work behind closed doors. And today, Marco Rubio, who is seated immediately to the right of President Trump, had a little fun talking about the job that President Trump was doing and why Labor Day has a little extra meaning for him as well.
So Marco, go ahead.
Well, Mr. President, first of all, everyone's made this comment already and needs to be echoed again. You were elected as the president of working Americans, and that's why this Labor Day is so meaningful. For me personally, this is the most meaningful Labor Day of my life as someone with four jobs. And so it's true.
Okay, so that was the joke today. And the president actually went on to say a few other things about Marco Rubio as well, and said that he was born to do this and that he's doing a really good job. He says, I don't know, maybe you should just keep doing this forever. Maybe you don't need to look for another job. And that was kind of a joke, too, because Rubio is obviously someone who has designs on potentially being president himself someday. So we'll see what happens there. But that was probably the most viral moment from the president's cabinet meeting today, with the media availability that happened at the beginning of the day. So we got a couple other clips from the cabinet meeting that we'll play for you as we go through the program here today. All right, it is time for us to take a check of news and weather. We've got a lot still going on before we finish up today. We're going to talk about crop prices here in the state of North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota as well, because soybean prices right now are in the tank. And how much further can they go down, and how big of a deal is this for soybean farmers in our state? Dr. Frayne Olson will join us here in just a few minutes. First, though, let's start with a check of the newsroom. Welcome back to the Steve Alsham Show, live from Washington, D.C. Very thankful to be here in the nation's capital with an opportunity to visit with Doug Burgum this morning, Christy Noem this afternoon, a number of people yesterday all over this boy, interesting city is maybe the best way to say it. And we want to thank Freedom Matters USA for being our presenting sponsor of our trip to Washington, D.C. Busick Olson and Associates, our premier sponsor, as well as supporting sponsors Jet Black Industries, Ellingson Drainage Solutions, Sun Control, Moxie Java, Halston Sinaskew Wealth Advisors, ND Estate Services, Remax Tom Clasho, and Dave's West Fargo Tire and Service. Well, part of my heart is back at home today, because I've been hearing stories from people in the ag industry about the difficulty that soybean farmers are going through right now. And to break it down and give us some not simple answers, but try to simplify the situation a little bit, we are pleased to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line Dr. Frayne Olson, NDSU crops economist. Dr. Olson, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Good to visit again.
Yeah, well, I wish it was under better circumstances. I got a text from a young farmer earlier today saying, we are negative basis right now on our soybeans. And I don't know a whole lot about the economics of commodities, but I know that's not a good thing. And so I did a little bit of research here this afternoon in preparation for our conversation. And some of the national ag media sources are quoting commodity prices for soybeans in North Dakota today, saying -165, -145, which basically means we're under $10 a bushel for cash prices. Tell us a little bit about what's going on and why we are seeing such a crunch on prices right now.
Yeah, okay, so let's understand what the numbers mean. So we start the kind of the national starting point for pricing is the futures market. And then what happens is we adjust that into the cash market. So the cash market's where the farmers are buying and selling their products, and in particular soybeans. So when I'm delivering the soybeans to the local elevator, I'm buying in the cash market. Well, what the local elevator does then has to make this adjustment between what we see at the national level in the futures market and what we're seeing at the local level. And that adjustment factor is called the basis. So it's just the difference between those two prices. Now, we normally in this region have a negative basis, so the prices in North Dakota are typically lower than the national average, but in the times we're at right now, that differential is much bigger than it normally would be. So we typically see maybe a minus 70 or a minus 90 cents per bushel, and now, as you've quoted, you know, we're looking at a minus $1.50, almost a $1.60 in some locations. So that differential in North Dakota is much, much wider than we would normally see. And one of the main reasons for one of the main reasons is because even though we have now these new crush plants in the region, a large portion of our soybeans still go out into the West Coast market. They go out to the what we call the Pacific Northwest. There's a series of export terminals there. And it goes by rail, and then they're loaded onto vessels, and they go typically into the Asian market, primarily into China. And the problem we're having right now is that the Chinese have not been buying soybeans from the U.S. yet. And that's very concerning for us. That usually at this time of year, we start to see some of those purchases from the Chinese market. They're switching from buying their soybeans in the Brazil to switching buying soybeans out of the United States. And most international buyers have to plan like 3 to 6 months in advance because of the timing differential. And so they're really starting to buy soybeans today for harvest delivery. And that's what's getting the market very concerned, is we normally see some purchases, some pretty big purchases at this point. But so far, officially, we haven't sold any soybeans to China yet. And that's what's really causing this anxiety. And the local markets, the local buyers, the local elevators are saying, well, if we buy soybeans at harvest, we're not really sure where or when we're going to be able to reship them. And so they're kind of putting a price discount, saying, well, we're not really sure when or where we're going to be able to resell it.
What a wonderful summary. Thank you for the detail there. I'm seeing some social media posts saying we might soon have $8 soybeans here. Now, I, again, don't follow it that closely, but if you ask me without me having any idea where soybean prices are at right now, I would say, well, typically we're at now $12, $13 a bushel, and while that's not great, you know, it's better than $8 or $9. How big of a deal is this for our producers in our region? I've got to think, times were sort of tough already. Input costs we know have been high. Prices have been pretty challenging. And now this kind of finding another floor. This could be, I hate to say it, but maybe the final straw for some producers, no?
It might be. And again, it depends upon each individual producer or farmer and what their costs are. The other thing that's happening, and I just want to, you know, kind of put this in context for everybody, is that we are expecting to have some very good yields, not only nationally for corn and soybeans, but also within our local region. And so that's also putting, you know, because we're going to have this big supply, putting some downward pressure on prices. So at the farm level, yeah, prices are low, and we might see prices going lower before we get into actual harvest. But some of that will be compensated for a little bit higher yields. Now, unfortunately, in most cases, the price drop is a lot larger than any kind of increase in bushels. And so the revenue, the gross sales volume, if you will, that the farmers are realizing is going to be probably less than they were expecting when they put the seed in the ground. And again, our costs have gone up substantially over the last several years.
Is this China just finding a better place to buy soybeans at a better price? Maybe the product is better, I don't know. Is this just kind of the typical, hey, let's find it where we can? Or do you think this is part of the gamesmanship that is going on between China and the United States with all the tariff talk that's been going on with President Trump's trade policy?
Yeah, and from my perspective, I guess my assessment, I think it's a combination of both. I think there's some of both going on. So, you know, our big competitor in the world of soybeans and soybean exports is Brazil. And Brazil had a monster crop this last year. In fact, they had a record production. And when they have more bushels produced, they have more bushels to sell. And so they have continued to sell into that Chinese market. And the Chinese have not had to come to the U.S. yet because they're still supplying beans out of Brazil. So the fact that they have a very large crop is allowing them to kind of extend, from a timing standpoint, extend their export season, which then makes our export season a little bit shorter. And so the big concern is, well, if we don't see some Chinese purchases soon, you know, this just continues to put this negative attitude or negative perspective into the marketplace. So I do think there's some gamesmanship going on as well. I think that, you know, obviously Chinese are very shrewd traders. They're very shrewd negotiators. I do think they're trying to put some additional political pressure on President Trump to try and come to an agreement, to try and get some kind of resolution to the tariff issues that we're facing right now with China.
Yeah, I saw a note that China hasn't bought a single bushel of new crop soybeans in this growing cycle, and that hasn't happened since 2010. So it's been a long time, and we know that, that there's been a massive amount of attention on the trade between Washington and Beijing. They've had this truce in place now for about 3 months or so, but this is certainly a significant development and at the worst possible time for our soybean farmers here. Before I let you go, Dr. Olson, is this kind of an old bleep moment for North Dakota soybean farmers, or do you feel like most growers kind of foresaw this coming and are figuring out how to deal with it? I mean, how big of a seismic issue and time is this in our industry and in our region?
This is not something that farmers were anticipating. In fact, I'm on the way traveling back from a meeting in southern Minnesota with some grain elevator managers in Minnesota, and that was the topic of conversation. Is given that we're going to have a good crop this year in the region, and we haven't had any export sales into China. What do we do with all the soybeans? How do we try and handle or manage this flow of grain? Because a lot of farmers are going to have challenges storing enough of their crop on their own farm, so they're going to have to sell some into this marketplace, and the elevators are recognizing that they too are going to have some storage constraints if they can't buy the grain, put it onto a train, and get it shipped out and exported as quickly as possible. So it's not just the farmers that are struggling trying to figure out what to do when coming up in harvest. It's also the grain elevators, and we're all kind of facing this oh shoot moment on, you know, what do we do next?
Yeah. Well, Dr. Olson, thank you for breaking it down. Really good perspective here and our thoughts. And I hate to say it, it sounds like some tragedy here, but we do keep our farmers in our thoughts and our prayers. We know it's been a good growing season in much of our region, so we are glad to see those yields as well. But it's tough because so much of our economy, whether it's the banks or the car dealers or everybody, is really affected by what's happening on the farm. So we'll keep watching it. And thankfully, we got good folks like you to help us break it down when we need to. Thank you for your time today.
No, I always appreciate the visit.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the time. Dr. Fran Olson from NDSU Crops Economist. Steve Holstrom Show returns right after this. Okay, I learned something today, actually last night, and I have to apologize to you because I've been telling you wrong. I've been saying there are 12 Fed governors, and I read somewhere what I thought was to be true, that there were 12, but there are not. There are 7. And yeah, you know where I'm going on this, right? This includes the chair, Jerome Powell, who vote on the interest rate policy. Now, currently, Trump has appointed 3 of the 7, Michelle Bowman, Christopher Waller, and Steve Marin, who is not in yet, but he's going to be confirmed here soon. If he can replace one more governor, then he has got a majority. 4 people who think like he does, the rates need to come down and come down a lot. Well, if Lisa Cook gets replaced and Trump is firing her, trying to do it by executive order, he would have 4 of the 7 votes, and Trump appointees would be the majority. We will have to watch and see how it plays out. All right, that is it for hour number 1 of the show. Hour 2 live from D.C. when we come back. Here we go with hour number 2 of the Steve Holstrom Show, live from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and we are having an absolute blast bringing your questions to D.C., where we're asking anybody and everybody in Trump world how their decisions impact what our life is like back in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. And what's been fun is we've had a number of questions that have come in. We've brought them out here. We've got a lot of answers so far. A few of them, we are still nailing down the right people. So yesterday, we got a chance to visit with a bunch of people, but you kind of get who you get at these things, and we did not get a whole lot of people on the tax side of things, but we did get a couple people who said, hey, give me a day, I'll get back to you, and we'll get on the air with you one way or another. So we are continuing to work on that. We thought we might be able to get all those answers in a couple of days. It might turn into more of a week-long project, but we're going to keep fighting to get the answers to the questions that you want to have answered. And so we're here doing that, and we've been working really hard to get a lot of those answers in. More of them coming as the week goes on. We want to say thank you to Freedom Matters USA, our presenting sponsor of our trip here to D.C. Busick Olson and Associates, our premier sponsor, Jet Black Industries, Ellingson Drainage Solutions, Sun Control, Moxie Java, Halstenson Askew Wealth Advisors, ND Estate Services, Remax Tom Clasio, and Dave's West Fargo Tire and Service. Having a great time out here working for you. These trips are, I'm not going to say that these are punishing trips, but the days are long and it's not as glamorous as maybe you would think it is, but it's certainly really good working conditions and it's really fun for us to be able to do these kind of things where we feel like we can take your concerns to DC and get some answers for you. So we are having a great time doing that. All right, a little housekeeping note here for you. We have a Lake Michigan charter fishing trip on Big Deals on the Big Deals auction website, and there was a snag with the system today in the bidding system, so we're extending that to tomorrow. So if you are interested in that and wondered if you missed your opportunity, you did not. Currently, the bid is only at $600 for Dumper Dan's Charter Fishing and Lodging Company, Sheboygan, Wisconsin on Lake Michigan. This is a package for six people, two half-day charters, and one night of condo lodging valued at $3,000. If this doesn't sound like a great buddy's trip, maybe a little bachelor party on the road from Lake Michigan where you got a guy that knows how to hook you into some of those big salmon they got out there, this would be a ton of fun. And right now, the bid is only at $600, so we'll pick that up tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. and finish the bidding and get a winner for that one. But right now, $3,000 value, yours for just $600 on the Big Deals page at am1100theflag.com. The auction is live, and it's going to be a fun one to watch, no doubt about that. So you did not miss out on that one. You'll still get that opportunity. So there you go. All right, it's time for the top five at five. These are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call the top five at five because sometimes in the busy rat race of the day, you get done with your day, you clock out at five, and you say, all right, I want to know the big stuff. What did I miss? What do I need to know? So these are not necessarily the stories that you'll find everywhere. This isn't the story about some guy slid off a road and got taken to the hospital with a broken arm. Not that that's not important to the guy with a broken arm, but for most of us, we say, tell me something about the world I live in that I really need to know. All right, so story number one comes to us from Axios, where they report that we are going to have the cheapest Labor Day gas in 5 years. A lot of us are driving over the holiday weekend, and hey, we all know what the story is, right? Prices have been crazy. Yes, inflation has slowed down, the price of the increases, but we're still dealing with all of those price increases that we've had over the last 5 years and the cost of living, which is so much higher than it was 5 years ago. But gas prices lower than recent years, and they could be going even further if predictions of softening oil supply demand balances come to pass. And we saw today prices down a little bit because Russia talked about pumping more oil into the worldwide pipeline there. Electricity prices going the other way these days. So if we can get low gas prices, well, that's a darn good thing. So they are talking about even more downside possibly with gas prices as well. So good news, lowest gas prices that we've seen since 2020. If you go back to, you might remember in the Trump administration, we had gas prices on average just a little over $2 a gallon. That was the national average. And in our part of the world, we were a little under $2. I remember it was like $1.89 or something like that on when Trump got elected. And when he got in, we were, you know, a little over $3 a gallon, and we're still sitting at a little over $3, but we've come down quite a bit since that time. And as I mentioned, we at least are getting back to some maybe price levels we saw back in 2018 when we were just under $3 a gallon. So we're going the right direction, not as far or as fast as I think the president would like, but all things considered, we're going the right direction, no doubt about that. The second story that I have here for you today is a story about enrollment at North Dakota State University. North Dakota State is up in enrollment from last fall. 11,954 students on the first day of classes there, and that's a 1% increase compared to the same day last year. Now, this includes, they say, a 3% increase in first-time freshmen, a 3% increase in transfer students, and a 1% increase in graduate enrollment. So we know that UND had a good year. They said they had a record number of students on their first day. It looks like NDSU ticking up as well. Certainly that North Star plan where you can get the free tuition will probably lead to a lot of schools seeing an uptick from last year. So we see that trend continuing. Story number three, Morehead City leaders have given the green light to aerial spraying for mosquitoes. The council voted 7-0 to reinstate the policy. As you remember, I told you last week that twice now the Morehead City Council declined or passed on a particular round of spraying that Cass County Vector Control was going to stage in the city of Morehead. Well, they have heard from a number of residents, and it was a unanimous vote. Only one city council member was not there last night. That was council member Deb White. Mayor Shelley Carlson and other council members say they've gotten a lot of feedback on the issue of aerial spraying. And Carlson said specifically, it's gotten the most conversation right now since she began on the city council. So people are really dug in on this issue. Council member Lisa Borgen told WDAY Radio she has to listen to those she represents, and most of them want us to aerial spray. She does say, I think there's an unrealistic expectation that aerial spraying is going to kill all the mosquitoes. That's just not going to happen, end quote. Well, she's right about that. And you get waves, no doubt. And we heard from Ben Prather that we'll get more, but at least if they come, it gives you a day or two where it's a little bit better. And really, what is the harm? I know the butterflies and the dragonflies. But at a time when we have West Nile virus in our community, which is part of this story as well, you've got to be vigilant about this, not just on an individual level, but as a community, as a city government as well. The North Dakota Department of Health and Human Services reports that we are seeing an uptick in North Dakota as to the number of residents that have contracted West Nile virus. 42 people across the state now. Cass County leads the way with 13 cases of West Nile. The group that is most at risk is actually the oldest. 60 plus is the group that has the most people in that have reported a case of that. 16 people in that category. So that's story number three. Story number four is one I've talked a little bit about already today, but I cannot do the top five of five and not put this story in for you. President Trump last night made an executive order to fire Lisa Cook, one of the seven Fed governors. The president, in doing so, says, I will soon have a majority of my nominees on the Federal Reserve Board who will back my desire to slash interest rates. And Cook came in under the Biden administration. Trump has already appointed two board members, and he has picked Stephen Miron, one of his top economic advisors, to serve out the rest of retired Governor Adriana Kugler's term. So he's appointed two, and I guess appointed three, but they call it something different. And if he could get one more to flip, he can get probably interest rates moving quickly to the downward side. And he's not just talking about a percent. He's talking about 2 or 3%. Now, this is, of course, causing a lot of debate within the economic community of should a president basically be able to write his own policy for the Federal Reserve, or should it be independent? And in this case, he's basically orchestrating that to happen. Cook has left the door open for that by committing mortgage fraud. At least that's the allegation. I have not personally seen the proof, but that's what everybody is saying there. So if this happens, Trump will not have to wait until May of next year when Jerome Powell, the current Fed chair, is scheduled to step down. He, I think, wants to get things changed right now. And if he can get 4 of the 7 votes, then he's got enough votes to make that happen. And finally, I think, No, I guess I can't say that. I was going to say we have the first person in the race for the city of Fargo mayor, but that's not entirely true. Although Joel Vettel tells our newsroom that he's considering a run for the top spot in the city of Fargo. Vettel spent a number of years at the Fargo PD and then was executive director of the Fargo Park District before a job with Sanford Health, and he's now a Cass County commissioner, says he's not just running for a city commission. He wants to be potentially considering being the mayor. So I don't know that we have anybody who's announced. I've heard Tony Gehrig is interested. I've heard Dave Pepcorn is interested. I've heard that Denise Kolpak, that seems to be one that everybody says, yeah, she wants the gig. So there are a number of people that are interested in the position. But nobody, I don't think, has come out to announce. And Joel Vettel has not done that yet either, but it looks like he's giving it a long look. Very interesting. All right, 520 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we return, I'm very excited for this next conversation. Have you heard of Arabella Advisors? Well, you will in just a few minutes. There's a reason you need to know about them. It's dark money going into liberal political candidates, and this is an expose that is being taken care of right now by Scott Walter, an author and our next guest on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I'm so glad there are people like Scott Walter out there who are trying to figure out what in the world is going on with all of these crazy gymnastics behind the scenes to influence elections. And we're very thankful to have Scott on with us right now. He is the author of a book called Arabella, The Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America. And as I'm in Washington, D.C. this week, boy, you have a chance to think about these things an awful lot in our nation's capital, because it is overwhelming to me every time I come here to realize that what happens in this city, in an area that it's a fairly large area, but when you think about it within, 5 square miles or so here in the nation's capital, it literally affects life on every inch of the globe, what happens in Washington, D.C. And Scott Walter is author of this book that we really need to hear about. Mr. Walter, thank you for taking the time. We appreciate you joining us. Welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line.
Well, great to be with you. And, I'm actually somebody who thinks flyover country is more important than the 5 miles here.
Well, we appreciate that. I think we can just agree that there are all parts of the country mean an awful lot. But certainly what happens in Washington, D.C. has such a potential to change things for so many people so quickly. But you're right. It's the heart and soul of America that really propels us forward in that spirit every day. So tell us about the Dark Money Network of Arabella Advisors. What do they do, and why do we need to know about them?
Yeah, well, let me do the why first. And the simplest way to understand the why is the size. We are talking billions of dollars that they take in every election cycle. They take in a lot more than the Republican and the Democrat national committees combined, like the RNC and the House and the Senate committees for both parties. So way bigger than all that. And the fact you haven't heard of them is not a good sign. It means that they've done a good job of staying under the radar the way they want to. Now, as for how they operate, the 30-second version is just to imagine a pyramid, okay? At the top of the pyramid, you have Arabella Advisors, which is a for-profit consulting company, Beltway Bandit, we call them in D.C., right, PR and the rest. And it creates and operates everything below it in the pyramid. Now, in the middle level of the pyramid, you have a half a dozen nonprofits of different legal types, and that's where the money comes in, right? That's where a Soros, a Zuckerberg, a Gates, and the rest, they write the checks to the nonprofits, right? And then at the base of the pyramid is what your listeners see. And it's hundreds and hundreds of fake groups with wonderful names, though, like Keep Iowans Healthy and Secure Michigan Elections and Floridians for a Fair Shake, right? They want you to think that those are some of your neighbors who've gotten together and are upset about something. But in fact, it's just some goofball in a D.C. office who's thrown up a website and bought some Facebook ads. And they fight in every political issue there is. you know, you name it, abortion.
You call it the indisputable heavyweight of Democratic dark money is how you talk about it in your book. So if they're the indisputable heavyweight of Democratic dark money, why has nobody in an organized way, political or legal or FBI or whatever, took a look into who these people are and if what they're doing is legal? Maybe it is, and if it is, then it's just, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. But I don't remember really any kind of exposés or anybody looking into what these people do and where their money comes from and how they get into the hands of the places that it goes to.
Yeah, well, I will brag, it was our team that was the first ever to find them. Nobody left, right, or center had ever written about Arabella itself. One of those nonprofits had had a couple of articles on it, but the people who wrote the articles didn't figure out that it was just one nonprofit among many run by this one organization. I of course done a whole book on it. And, if your listeners want to find out lots more, immediately, they can go to our influencewatch.org. That's our online Wikipedia of the left. Influencewatch.org, and look up Arabella, and it's like Wikipedia, right? It's all cross-referenced and all documented, and I warn you, you lose 5 hours of your life the first time you go to the site. But there's a lot there, and I will tell you, I have been briefing a number of senior administration officials about them since the new administration took over, and I testify regularly to Congress about left-wing nonprofits and what they're up to, Little by little, we are succeeding in getting the word out, but it needs to be a household name like Soros.
Yeah, so I might not like what this is, what's going on here, because they're obviously supporting the candidates that I do not want in office, but is anything that they're doing illegal?
Well, in theory, everything they're doing could be legal under our very complicated, messy, and dubious laws for nonprofits. But I'll tell you, they're in the midst of a lawsuit, and the lawyers involved are one of the top tort law firms in the country. So I think they're scared by that. And it involves a black woman that they fired, and she alleges that both that they discriminated against her racially, but also that they retaliated against her when she went to her bosses and said, "Whoa, you're not following the complicated nonprofit rules here. You're breaking them with these groups." So that lawsuit is, it's in the middle of everything. It's going, and there's some public documents from it, but it's a long way from being finished. The public documents are very damning. They definitely appear to show that they were not following the complicated laws that you have to follow if you are going to be doing everything legally.
Sounds like something from a Ricky Bobby movie. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Sounds like is what's happening here. Have you gained any sense at all that the Trump administration is on to this and will do some kind of investigation into something like this? It seems like the kind of thing that Donald Trump might want to get involved with.
As I said, I have definitely briefed a number of senior administration officials about this, and I know that some folks are looking into it. It's always, first, I can't say everything that I know, and second, I don't know fully what will end up being done, right? But if the answer is somebody looking into it, yes, there definitely are multiple folks in multiple agencies looking into this.
You have been a key member of some pretty high-level political organizations. You served in the George W. Bush administration as special assistant to the president for domestic policy. So you've been around this game for a while. Is this whole concept of big money, like whatever it costs money to try to shape elections, is this new? Or do these numbers like $2.4 billion, that's just what the going rate is now, and there have always been these efforts going on?
Well, it is absolutely true that the money in these things just goes up and up, right? Every election is more expensive than the election before it because people are trying harder and harder to, you know, buy influence and buy success. So there's just ever more money. On the other hand, you know, Arabella was first started in 2005. It was tiny at the start, but, you know, it's been growing since 2005. It was in the hundreds of millions in the 20-teens. So
it's gone up quite a bit. So it's kept pace with the pace of inflation, at least, it certainly seems. I want to ask you just
more than that,
kind of a theory. Yeah, probably. I want to ask you a theory question, Scott. This is something that has... I have to admit, I'm not a political animal. I work at a conservative news talk station. I certainly am a conservative, probably more so than most people. But I've never really understood why there is this attitude in some places of, like, we have to win these elections no matter what. Like, I get why we want to have certain ideas alive and well, and certain principles that are things that we care about. But there seems to be this idea that if we can win the elections, we can have this holy grail in front of us, and we can do whatever we want. Is it the power that people want so badly to conduct their social experiments or their philosophies? Is it we figure we can stack the game so we're going to make more money? Is it hubris, just the pride of having been able to do these things? Why do you think people like George Soros at some point just got so overwhelmed with this political game that he said, I'm going to give all of this money to political efforts so that I can win and I can get my way? What do you suppose him and whoever else is like him, what are they really going after? What is their end game?
Well, I think that it is best understood as lust for power, right? St. Augustine talked about that about 1800 years ago. You know, there's no limit to somebody's lust for power. And, you know, the average person thinks, well, I'd be so powerful if I were a billionaire, I'd be satisfied. Well, maybe, but it doesn't, you know, there are plenty of billionaires that don't seem to work that way. And that's why I talked about how, you know, why I value the Dakotas, for instance. You know, I want the Dakotas to be able to run the Dakotas. I want Dakotans to run Dakotas. I don't want anybody in the five square miles here or around New York or San Francisco to be the ones determining what happens in the Dakotas. That's horrible. That's not America. And what I can tell you with Arabella is everything they ever support is taking money away, is taking authority and power away from people in the Dakotas and the rest of the country and centralizing it in D.C. And it sure is a lot more easy to manipulate D.C. than it is to manipulate everybody in North Dakota.
Yeah, it's maybe a question that is doesn't have a perfect answer, but I just think about these efforts to bring in as many illegals as possible and try to just basically overrun the border. And we've seen in our country, and common sense would tell you, that our communities don't get better when there's unlimited numbers of people coming in here illegally. Yet this is what these people are fighting for, tooth and nail. And I just kind of shrug my shoulders. Maybe I'm a little naive and I just don't really understand that they think this is going to help them win an election, so they don't care if the country looks like a trash dumpster. I don't know. I just have always wrestled with that. Like, why is this so important for these people to do things that don't really make any sense to those of us that try to think through things with a critical, perspective and try to figure out why someone will want to do the things that they are doing. So I guess they do, and I guess that's all we need to know. And this book certainly sounds like a very interesting read. And thank you, Scott, for the work that you and your organization have done and are doing to tell us about these things. Because when I saw this bulletin come over from your publicist, I said, I've never heard of this company, but or this organization, but I'm glad that you're working on it, glad that you're doing interviews like this and telling people as many as you can about what's happening, because we do need to be aware of it. And I do hope, I noticed your answer was a little cryptic there earlier about, does the Trump administration know about this, and are they going to do anything about it? I sure hope that we can get the answers. Whatever the truth is, I just want the truth to come out on these things, and then people can decide for themselves if they like it or not. So thank you, Scott, for all the work that you are doing on this one, and we'll continue to keep an eye on things, and definitely have you on sometime down the road as the situation might open up for it.
Well, thanks. I'd love to be back with you.
Sounds good. Scott, take care, and we appreciate it. All the best to you and your organization. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure.
Scott Walter, he is the author of Arabella, The Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America. Sounds like a good read as we get into the fall and winter months when we might be inside a little bit more. So there you go, an idea for you. All right, we're a little bit behind on our bottom of the hour news and weather break, so let's get that taken care of right now. And then when we come back, want to hear from RFK Jr. He was part of Trump's big cabinet meeting today, and I thought this was a very interesting comment that he made. I've got about a 2-minute clip from what he talked about today. It sounds like in about a month or so, we're going to learn some very interesting things about what's been going on in our medical community with vaccines. So that and more on the way as we continue on the Steve Hallstrom Show. At Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, Dr. Eaton helps everybody, young, seasoned, and everywhere in between. He has dedicated his professional life to transforming smiles and restoring confidence one patient at a time. And when you meet him, you'll feel it. It's not just a job, it's his calling. Dr. Matt Eaton is the guy. Whether you need a single tooth or a full mouth restoration, he's here with skill, compassion, and experience. Whether you've been hiding your smile for years or you're just ready for a fresh start, trust his skill, compassion, and experience. Visit DakotaDentalImplant.com today. Well, today at President Trump's cabinet meeting, he let all of the cabinet secretaries have a word, but he kind of sets them up. And today, he hinted, as he introduced Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Health and Human Service Secretary, he hinted that there might be some very interesting announcements coming up very soon from RFK Jr.
That's great, Bobby. Bobby, autism, if I could just, I don't want to go too long because we have a lot of people, but the autism is such a tremendous horror show, what's happening in our country and some other countries, but mostly our country. How are you doing on that?
We are doing very well. We will have announcements as promised in September. We're finding certain interventions now that are clearly, almost certainly causing autism. And we're going to be able to address those in September.
It's such a big day. I'm looking forward to that day because there's something wrong when you see the kind of numbers that you have today versus 20 years ago. And those numbers, what are those numbers, Bob?
Well, in 1970, the biggest epidemiological study in history was done in Wisconsin. They looked at 900,000 children, and they were looking for autism. They knew what it looked like, and they were very, very precise about it, and they found an incident rate of 0.7, in other words, less than 1 per every 10,000 children. Today, our most recent numbers are 1 in every 31 kids. It's probably actually much worse than that because California, which has the best collection system, is reporting 1 out of every 19 children, American children, as autism, 1 in every 12.5 boys. So it's gone from less than 1 in 10,000 in 1970 1 in 12.5 boys.
Think of those numbers. So there has to be something artificially causing this, meaning a drug or something. And I know you're looking very strongly at different things, and I hope you can come out with that as soon as possible.
We will.
So 1 in 10,000, and now it's 1 in 31 or 34 or 12 if it's a boy. Can you imagine that? 1 in 12. That's for a boy. It's not even believable that that could be. And that was 1 in 10,000 not so long ago. I've been hearing these numbers, and they get worse and worse every year. There's got to be something. I think there's nothing, including favored nations and everything else, there's nothing that can be, if you can find out the reason that that's happening, and I know we're going to We're going to do some things. I think it's. I think we maybe know the reason, and I look forward to that press conference, to be with you on that press conference. That's going to be a great thing. Thank you, Bob. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, Melania Trump is big on this too. She is really digging in on this as well. Going to be very interesting, and they're going to definitely rattle some cages, it sounds like, here in a few weeks. All right, I want to say thank you again to our sponsors making our trip to D.C. possible, Freedom Matters USA, Busick Olson & Associates, Jet Black Industries, Ellingson Drainage Solutions, Sun Control, Moxie Java, Halston Senaskew Wealth Advisors, ND Estate Services, REMAX Tom Klosho, and Dave's West Fargo Tire and Service. Made our trip possible to be out here in D.C. and get a chance to hear comments like that coming from President Trump's cabinet meeting today. It just reminds you how consequential things are in Washington, D.C. And boy, that administration, they do not waste time. They don't sleep very much. We saw Doug Burgum bright and early this morning, and you can tell he's running at an absolutely crazy pace. All right, when we come back on the program, a couple of comments have come in. One from a farmer that says, Steve, the problem that's going on with China getting soybeans from Brazil, well, there's a bunch of them, but they can go two crops a year, so they can really produce a lot. So we'll dig into that a little bit. Plus, 7 Fed governors, 12, got a little bit of a clarification on how they vote on Fed interest rate policy. So we'll do that too when we come back. All right, we're going to finish up the show today with a couple of guys making us all a little smarter. From the text line, a couple of notes have come in on stories we've been talking about today. Steve, there's a very short amount of time before the second Brazil bean crop comes back online in February. So even if we do hold on to soybeans, if we don't get China to buy via necessity or a trade deal, we might not see any improvement on price. China doesn't want to buy any U.S. soybeans if they don't have to. Their market share is exploding because they're burning rainforests as fast as they can to break up new acres. So even though we can out-yield them, they have so many more acres and it's always growing. They also have 2 growing seasons. I did not know that. I guess China's a big country. I guess I always thought of it as a cold weather climate, but maybe not that cold. And then Mark gives us some perspective here today. He says, Steve, interest rates in the U.S. Are set by a committee within the Federal Reserve called the FOMC Committee, but it includes the 7 members of the Board of Governors and the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, who serve as permanent voting members, and the remaining 4 voting seats are held by other Federal Reserve Bank presidents on a rotating 1-year basis. So there are 12 individuals that vote on monetary policy, thus no need for you to apologize. You did have the number correct. Okay, well, thank you for that, Mark. Maybe the president is just feeling like if he can get 4 of the main 7, that might be enough to drive the rest of them, but it certainly doesn't seem to be any kind of a guarantee that he'll get his way, even if he gets Cook off the board. All right, well, that'll do it for today. I'm back in studio in Fargo tomorrow. Excited to see you back in the home territory tomorrow. Have a great night, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.